This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. It's already mid-June, and the warm lull of summer is finally descending upon us. But thanks to the snowstorms and hurricanes of last fall and winter, students across Massachusetts aren't celebrating summer quite yet and will be in class until the end of this month.
Which might be a good thing. Many education reformers, including President Obama and his education secretary, Arne Duncan, say more school in the summer is just what students need. They point out that the school year in the U.S. is far shorter than it is in many other countries with whom we compete. For example, in Japan, the school year runs a full 2 months longer than here in the United States.
Across the country, including here in Massachusetts, schools are beginning to dip their toes into these waters. Fall River and Lawrence are experimenting with a longer school year, as are many charter schools in Boston. But the accepted wisdom that a longer school year and more time in school leads to better academic results is not a given. The research is inconclusive, which leads us to this question.
Are we ready to reinvent our school calendar and extend the school year? Will a longer academic year improve schools?
Well, joining us now is Jennifer Davis, who says the answer to those questions is yes. She's co-founder and president of the National Center on Time and Learning. It's a Boston-based organization dedicated to expanding learning time to improve student achievement. She joins us today from New York. And Jennifer Davis, thanks for joining us. Welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us here in the studio, Peter Gray. He says the answer is no. He's a professor of psychology at Boston College. His new book is Free to Learn: Why Unleashing the Instinct to Play Will Make Our Children Happier, More Self-Reliant, and Better Students for Life. And Peter Gray, welcome to you. Great to have you.
I'm glad to be here.
And listeners, we want to invite you into this conversation. Do you think the school year should be longer? Do students need more time to learn? Would they benefit from it? Or do students need more time to play in an unstructured environment? Give us a call at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. And Jennifer, let me get you, if you could, to just lay out your case a little bit. One of the main arguments for a longer school year is that students fall behind academically during the long summer months, right?
That is right, but it really is important to focus on the demographics. So, for example, families like ours, like my family, I am investing significant resources to ensure that my daughter has a summer experience that includes science camp and outdoor adventure camp, and the list goes on and on. The children that don't have those resources are the ones that often have a huge learning loss because of the summer. And that is because they don't have the benefit of engaging enrichment and learning opportunities during the summer. And what we're saying is we, one, have to actually improve public education to make it engaging and more fun for kids so they want to be there. And two, we need to look at the schedule to ensure that every child has the time they need to succeed and be prepared for the future.
So what's the actual proposal? I mean, right now, the state mandates that students, attend 180 days of school a year. What would your proposal be? What would be ideal?
Well, let me be clear. Our work in the public policy arena has called on states, districts, and schools to increase learning time for high-poverty kids. And we've put out there a recommendation and, in some cases, a requirement that 300 additional hours be added to the traditional school schedule. And you can do that across the school year or across the school day. In other words, you could have a longer school day or a longer school year or some combination. Some of the highest-performing high-poverty schools add time to the school day and to the school year. And there are many different models that are unfolding across the country. And the summer months have to be talked about a little bit differently than I think the school year. Because I think what you'll hear from Peter in just a minute talk about is we need these opportunities to truly engage children in learning and excite them about the learning process and help them to see the connection between what they're learning with the world and with their futures. Mm. And in schools that aren't doing that now, adding time to the school year isn't going to really achieve what we need to achieve. So it's a bigger, more complicated story.
Sure. And I'm going to turn to Peter in a second. I just want to ask you sort of one more question to sort of help lay out this case. You know, we're often told, I mean, the point is often made that 3 months off in the summer is sort of this antiquated vestige of another time when basically we had to let kids out of school so they could help with a harvest and that sort of thing. So there is this sort of antiquated idea, this sort of antiquated origin of this. But how does our calendar compare to other countries, for example?
Well, some of the highest performing countries in the world that we compete with have significant more time, longer days, longer years, the Asian countries in particular. Those countries that don't have more time typically have very low, like Finland, very low poverty rates, 2%, 4%. We have a 22% child poverty rate in this country. But the Asian countries in particular and others that are outperforming us, have significantly longer school years, and that's one of the things we worry about.
Mm. Well, Peter Gray, let me come to you. You've done a lot of work around education and psychology. What's the relationship that you've found between the amount of time kids are in school and how well they perform? Is there a direct correlation there?
Let me tell you my research on this. You know, over the last 50 or 60 years, there has been a continuous increase in the amount of time that children spend at school, counting school homework. Continuous increase. Over this same period of time, there has been a dramatic rise in all sorts of mental disorders among children. There's been a decline in creativity. It's not just that we're seeing mental disorders where we didn't see them before. It is that according to standardized tests that have been given to normative samples over many years, such as the MMPI, which has a scale for depression, or Taylor's Manifest Anxiety Scale, which is a measure of anxiety, there has been a 5 to 8-fold increase in diagnosable depression and anxiety disorders in children. There has been an increase in suicides. This has all been accompanied by an increase in the amount of time that children are spending under adult direction in school and out of school. What we have lost over this time is children's free play. Children need freedom. They are designed to play and explore. They're designed by natural selection for that, to play and explore with other kids. This is how they learn how to control their own lives, how they learn to take responsibility for themselves, how they become creative, how they discover their own passions, how they learn how to solve their own problems, how they learn how to get along with other kids. We have been continuously taking freedom away from children, and this is a proposal for doing yet more of that.
Well, let me ask you, though, about one of the points that Jennifer Davis made right at the beginning, and that is more time in school, particularly important for low-income students who don't come from families, like Jennifer's, as she said, who can send their kids to all kinds of enrichment activities that might include opportunities for unstructured play that you're talking about.
The unstructured play is the particularly important part of it, because this is where children really learn how to take control of their lives. Now, I admit, we've got a problem of poverty. There's no question about it. And the question is, how do we solve this problem? Do we solve this problem by requiring more, basically forcing children into more total days and hours of school, where it's not their choice, where they're under adult direction, where they're not learning to take personal responsibility? Or do we solve this problem by looking at other approaches to solve it? There's lots of other ways. If we step out of this box of school and we start thinking about what these people need, the children in poverty areas need the same things as children everywhere. They need safe places to play. They need experience with people who enjoy reading and read for fun, not reading in school where you're doing it for a grade and you're being constantly evaluated on it. The reason the kids in some neighborhoods learn to read easily and learn their academic skills easily is because this is part of their environment. It's something they do for fun rather than something that's being done in the school-like setting. So the question is, how can we provide this in the environment for people who are growing up without it? Mm. And there's a lot of possible solutions. For example, in South Africa, there are now reading clubs being developed for poor kids who are not learning to read in school. And they've had amazing success. These are entirely voluntary. They're helping teach parents to read to their kids. And native South Africans who previously were not learning to read are beginning to learn to read through these programs. And the kids love them.
Peter, let me just jump in because I want to bring Jennifer back into this conversation. Jennifer, I'd love to get some of your responses here. I mean, Peter's laid out a lot of his feelings, his conclusions. What do you make of that argument?
Sure. So my early work in Boston, I led Mayor Menino's 2-6 after school initiative, where we worked and doubled the number of children in those programs, which were about arts and music and a whole variety of things, and very exciting as far as, you know, allowing kids to choose the activities they'd be in and so forth. And so those are all very important. And, you know, those kind of programming in urban communities are very important because sometimes it's not safe for kids to play in their neighborhood or to be at home. And, you know, again, those are the kids that I'm focused on the most. I would say, and I would encourage Peter and those of you in the studio too, to maybe visit a couple of schools in Boston that are doing very creative things for high poverty kids and are encouraging, maybe I won't say play, but how about engaged learning and exciting project-based learning and all kinds of things, more physical fitness, more arts, more music. Orchard Gardens in Boston is one of those examples that has been featured over and over again. We work very deeply with Orchard Gardens, and we have from the very beginning when Principal Andrew Bott took over the school. And, you know, within the context of that school day, because there is more time and there are many partners, is a health clinic is a part of the school, there is much more music and art and choice activities that kids can choose what they want to do during enrichment time, but they're also getting strong academic and individualized support from teachers. And in the summer, many of those kids are going to Thompson Island Outward Bound as a part of their school experience. I mean, isn't that the kind of thing we want to see, the kind of opportunities? That school also is very conscious about health and mental health services and needs and really pays attention to making sure kids are getting the supports that they need.
Listeners, we're talking about whether it's a good idea to extend the school year to subject kids to give kids the opportunity for more school. And I want to go to a bunch of callers who are lined up and ready to go. But Peter Gray, let me just come back to you just to sort of pick up on one point that Jennifer Davis makes. I mean, it seems like what we're talking about here is not just more school, but the opportunity to be engaged in good academic programmings and good and productive learning environments. I mean, doesn't that make sense? It sounds like it makes intuitive sense.
There's a couple of things I'd like to comment on here. First of all, regarding the question that you've just raised, I think the important question is it voluntary or not? Mm-hmm. If it's voluntary, then in a certain sense, it's play. Because the kids are doing it because they want to be there. They don't feel like they're being in prison. They're not entrapped. If this is really so attractive, that kids really like it, that they really want it, that parents are behind it and they want it, then it could be voluntary. Let's not make it mandatory. Let's make it voluntary. But then there's a second point I want to make here, and that's that there was reference, and we hear this all the time, reference to the Asian countries and the high scores and the amount that their time they're spending in school. I would really recommend to Jennifer and to the listening audience that you read some of the books by Yang Zhao. He is perhaps the leading expert on the comparison of Chinese education and Asian education generally with American education. He presents absolutely convincing evidence that the Asian education system has utterly failed. It has failed to produce people who are creative. It has failed to produce entrepreneurs. More and more, the educational leaders in these countries, in China, South Korea, Singapore, are recognizing and speaking out about the fact that their kids are spending too much time in school. In fact, one of the leading educators in China reported recently that he will know that reform has occurred when the test scores go down because the children are being driven to work towards these high test scores. They're not learning how to be creative. They're not learning to solve real problems. They're not learning how to react in the real world. Moreover, I talked about the rise in mental disorders in our country among children as play has declined. It is even worse in these countries, far worse. It's well documented.
Jennifer, I can hear you dying to get in there. Please respond quickly because we've got a lot of callers and our time is
winding down.
Go ahead.
Schools in Boston are voluntary. You choose to go there, and there are a waiting list at these expanded learning time schools because kids love it and parents love them. Secondly, with regard to China and some of the Asian countries, I have met recently with leaders from Shanghai. I understand the point that you're making. They are concerned. They want to have more creative opportunities in schools, and they're moving in that direction. That's terrific. That's still not to say, though, that we should not have children in this country that cannot read and they're graduating from high school. That's just not acceptable.
All right. 1-800-423-8255. Let's go to some listeners. Mary is calling from Andover. Hi, Mary. You're on the air.
Good afternoon. Thank you for taking my call, and thank you for having a discussion about this particular topic. I'm a high school teacher, and I'm fascinated listening to both perspectives here because I think both of them have very valid points. I happen to teach in a very affluent community, a very high-pressure community. I think all schools are high-pressure just for different reasons. But I want to strongly urge people to consider the difficulty of coming up with a one-size-fits-all answer for schools, because every single community is different. We're seeing this with education reform. We're seeing it with No Child Left Behind, that we are making the theory is out there that education in America is falling apart and we need to fix it. And there are many things about education in America that do need to be adjusted and changed and that need to adapt to the time. There's a lot that works as well, and trying to say that every school needs to do this does not make sense. I think expanding the school year isn't a bad idea. I think it could be expanded in a more creative way. Instead of having a really long summer, have more breaks throughout the year. There are answers to be found, but I strongly urge people to look at the community, their own community, and ask what will work best here. What are the needs and wants of the people in this community, and how can we achieve that in a way that's most beneficial for our students? In our high school, our biggest problem isn't the length of the year. It's the fact that we're starting too early when our students should be sleeping an extra hour later.
Mary,
you can't get anybody to talk about that.
Yeah, no, it's a great, you put a lot on the table there, and I appreciate it, Mary. And we're going to hold a couple of these ideas and talk about them in a moment. But I want to go to Georgia, who's calling from Weston. Hi, Georgia, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm a high school student and also a very high-pressure town. And one of the things that having such a long school day, as ours starts at 7:30 and doesn't get out till 2:50, then all I have time to do is go and do my activity for 2 hours, and then I spend the rest of my time and all of my weekends doing homework. And the fact of the matter is, it doesn't make me want to learn. It doesn't make me interested in anything around me. It just makes me resent school. So I think that having the perspective of somebody currently in our education system, I don't think that lengthening the school day or the school year is the appropriate solution to this problem. I think that, you know, when we're in school, we learn how to solve problems, we learn how to study for the test, but that doesn't foster creativity and things that really help make America things that are not like all the other Asian cultures that, yes, they're successful,
Georgia,
but they're quite standard.
Yeah, Georgia, I'm really grateful for your perspective. So, Jennifer, let me come to you, because we heard from a teacher there and from Georgia's student, the teacher saying, Mary, you know, let's not do a one-size-fits-all. And there's Georgia sort of talking about enough, you know, I've got to have time for creativity.
Sure. Well, Mary, actually, I 100% agree with you that we only work with communities and schools that voluntarily want to look at this opportunity and look at school designs and want to move in this direction. So this is not a one-size-fits-all. It shouldn't be. Every school that we work with, every district we work with does it a little bit differently. They add different kinds of enrichment programs and so forth. So I totally agree with you. And by the way, many communities don't really need to consider this because parents are paying for cool and interesting summer activities for kids. And so it isn't really so much of an issue there. And so I think that's, I totally agree with you, Mary, and very much. Now, to Georgia, first of all, many of the schools we work with eliminate or cut back on homework because they try to focus the time when kids are in school on these project-based learning and a whole variety of things, and they feel that because of the longer day, in that case, homework at a high level of it anyway really doesn't make sense, and so that's something that, you know, should be on the table. And lastly, I really want to say that there's some new research that's going to be coming out on sleep deprivation, and I actually think we do need a movement in this country that has particularly high school kids starting later in the day.
Well, I would say amen to that. I mean, as father of a teenage daughter, I have seen the pain of having to get up and go to school at the ungodly hour of 8 in the morning. Tough for teenagers.
Absolutely.
Listen, but let me ask you, you mentioned research. Let me ask you both this. What do we really know about the connection between more time and improved student performance? Because as I was sort of digging around with my producer's help today, it seems like the research is inconclusive at best about this. I was looking at a recent study from the University of California on Mexican elementary schools, and it found very little correlation between the two.
Well, what we do know is that it has to be time well used.
Mm-hmm.
If you add time in a very low-functioning Mexican school, you're not going to see results. I mean, of course. And all of our research and all of our reviews have looked at high-performing, high-poverty, expanded time schools. And they all have a number of things in common about how they use their time. They're very individualized and focused on every individual student and what their needs are and what their deficiencies are and where they need help. They support teachers. More time in school, if it's done well, enables more teachers to work together, to collaborate, to develop new curriculum together, to review data. But time for teachers is critical in this whole effort here. And they make decisions on how time is used based on good input from students about the kinds of activities that they want to have as a part of their school day. So there's a variety of things that high-performing schools that provide both a well-rounded education and a high-standards education do. Our report, Time Well Spent, studied 30 of them, and I welcome you to go to our website and check that out.
Peter, I want to come to you with a question about this. You know, you talk about the need to give kids the freedom to choose and to have unstructured time, but how do you expect all kids to make good choices? I mean, isn't it the role of parents and teachers and schools to, that's part of educating a kid, is to teach them how to make good choices? And if you just give them the freedom, maybe they won't make those good choices.
You know, throughout human history, children and teenagers have had a great deal of freedom, not during the time that they were working in sweatshops, but during all of hunter-gatherer periods, during even, you know, when I was a child growing up in the 1950s, we were free all summer long. Our parents didn't put us in courses. They didn't buy things for us. We were just free. We're out playing with other kids. We were doing all sorts of things. You talk with anybody my age who grew up in the 1950s, and they will tell you that they learned a lot more in that free play with other kids than they learned in school. They learned how to take initiative. They learned how to get in and out of trouble. They learned how to get along with peers, how to solve their own problems. You know, it's that kind of learning that makes America great. It's not the learning that comes from top-down instruction. And this is what we're losing. This is what we have lost as a society, and we have to regain it. This is where we should be putting our efforts. How do we recreate the opportunity for children to learn again through their own free play as they are meant to do?
Well, clearly, hugely important discussion about a very important issue. I'm sorry we don't have more time, but the conversation will continue. Peter Gray, a professor of psychology at Boston College, thanks so much for coming in. We appreciate it.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
And Jennifer Davis, co-founder and president of the National Center on Time and Learning, which is a Boston-based organization dedicated to expanding learning time to improve student achievement. Thank you so much, Jennifer Davis.
Thank you for having me.
And listeners, I'm sorry we couldn't get to all of you. The conversation continues at radioboston.org as well as on Facebook. Stay with us. There's lots more programs still ahead. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.